Welcome to the Brand Promise Podcast with Louise Duffy, the podcast which introduces you to the people behind the brands from the world of fashion, beauty, and beyond. In today's Brand Promise Podcast, I'm joined by Maria Tash, a lady who has achieved incredible success across multiple platforms. In business, she has grown her small studio in New York to a global brand with stores in Dubai, Rome, London, and Brand Promise. In design, she creates intricate and instantly recognizable jewelry. And in body modification, she has revolutionized the process of piercing worldwide. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brand Promise Podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Wow, what a lovely intro. Thank you.
Well, I'm so excited to meet you because recently I had the Maria Tash experience.
Good.
Absolutely amazing because I had a different view of piercing. So like I think the last time I got pierced, I was maybe 16 and it was down some side street in Spain on a family holiday. And I think had I asked them, they would have pierced my toe. So I had a very different view of, and this was such a luxurious process.
Good.
And the consideration that went into it, I was just so impressed by it. So it's a really special. A special customer experience that you've created.
I'm glad there's many layers to it. Like first you come in and you meet the stylists and their job is to sort of guide you through the process of selecting the components that you're going to layer together together into your look or your curation, as we're calling it nowadays. But you know, their function is to look at your complexion and a lot of people intuitively know what color shirts look good on them or bring out their eyes or just, I don't know, somehow they put on a blue shirt, it looks a lot better than a mustard shirt, for example.
Yeah.
And so our job is to do that with metal color as well. So you're going to come in and get something, and then what color looks good on you? Is it rose, or does that make you look sallow? Is it yellow gold? Is it white for the punch? You know, so that's one aspect of curation, and the Maria Tash experience of jewelry curation.
Yeah.
And also we look at anatomy. And we also look at your personal aesthetic. So like some people don't like diamonds and that's fine. Or they may be more minimalist or some people are avant-garde and they don't want their lobe. They want something unusual embedded in an unusual spot of the ear.
Yeah.
So our job is to help have fun and guide you through creating something with my jewelry that you'll layer together and it really resonates with you and you feel creative doing it and have fun and brings out your individualism.
Well, it's important that you take that care in the approach because it's a permanent adjustment, you know? And that's what kind of stuck with me because they were looking at the angles of where they, you know, so I was saying, I really like this, but they said it needs to sit in this part of your earlobe and that consideration, you know, it made it a lot easier. And it's, as I said, it's all very luxurious. You know,
good.
It's a lot better than the grungy experience I've had in my past.
That's true. A lot of people like I don't want to get too technical because people always tell me I tend to go that way because
I have
a science. Well, I was an undergrad science major, so I tend to love the technical. But people think you draw down on the ear; that's your spot. But there's so much more than that. There's the three dimensional tunnel, not just one dimensional dot. So even if I drew a dot on your ear, three piercers could give you a different result based on the direction of the tunnel with that same starting point.
And so is this your forward-facing approach?
Yes. I love the fact you know that term.
I know this now.
Thank you.
Talk to us through your forward-facing approach. So that is how it lands, I guess, in the autonomy of your earlobe.
Correct. So the philosophy is the jewelry should flatter the wearer. And I know it sounds really basic, but it's most piercers and most piercing guns go through the shortest distance of tissue, which is usually perpendicular.
Yeah.
But that may not be the most flattering to the wearer. Now, most people know this by maybe their friends or their mothers. They have some studs that stick out to the side or hoop earrings that look weird from the front. And they always have to turn their head to see the design on the stud. It's because the angle of the tunnel is not forward facing.
Okay.
So I've designed some tools where we give people previews and we slide faux rings on your ears so we can adjust the backside of the piercing to match the front so that it's forward facing so you don't get something that's turned in a weird way.
Okay.
It's all about things being flattering for when you look in the mirror and not turned in a weird way.
Okay.
If you go get something done with a gun, you may not get matching trajectories.
Yeah. So you have a growing staff globally.
Yes.
And you obviously curate, we keep using that word, curate,
yeah, I know.
But you do curate the customer experience to ensure that this consideration goes into every piercing. So if you have somebody who has a long history in piercing, do you retrain them or all your staff?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
actually.
Do they all get the same kind of training? Yeah.
Sometimes people who have been piercing a long time can't change.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
the old
the
dog
truth.
New tricks. Yeah.
You know, you have to be open enough to be hired within the company is a process. One of the first things we do is we vet their current work, either mm-hmm. through their Instagram or whatever, see how many years they've been working. But really a part of it is like, are you willing to do forward facing?
Okay.
Are you willing to do jewelry that's this thickness? So my jewelry tends to be thinner than most traditional body jewelry.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just have this old mind frame that it has to be thick and it has to be perpendicular for it to heal and it won't be sturdy. And so they won't make it through the initial stages of the vetting process if they don't agree with that. But I like, you know, the proof is in the pudding. We've done, you know, tens of thousands of these piercings with using my philosophy. Mm-hmm. And but most people do come on board. But there are some older sticklers that may not want to change what they're doing. But usually people willing to come on board know that there's something energetic and interesting going on and they want to be part of it.
Absolutely. So let's go back a little bit then, Maria, because you studied astronomy originally. This would not be a typical career progression.
True.
So how did you get into it all? Like, where did it start for you?
I think it started on my first trip when I was 16. I went to London, mm-hmm. Kensington Market. And it was, you know, in the 80s, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
I went there. Of course, I'm talking with my 16 and 17-year-old eyes speaking. but I got my nostril double pierced in Kensington Market in the 80s. And I remember my mother was very upset with me. And but I got those done. I remember having a lot of fun coordinating like my nostril jewelry to my hair color at the time. And I was getting multiple ear piercings. A lot of it was home jobs, doing things on my own. I bought a gun at one point. I used them on my friends.
Yeah.
My friends used it on me. I didn't do it to myself with the gun, but I did have pierced myself with the needles. But
you self-pierced.
Yeah, but that's harsh.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when I was much younger, it's like, you're home, you're like, all right, I'm going to do this. And it's just
I have to gear myself up to wax my legs. I can't imagine what it must be like to actually
I'm not doing
pierce.
That myself anymore. Well, you know, I will pluck things myself, though. I feel more in control.
But to actually pierce yourself, that takes strength.
But a lot of it is, you know, experimentation. And, you know, a lot of piercers have pierced themselves.
Yeah.
Many, many. And some of it is, you know, you want the control. And some of it is you're experimenting and you want to try something. But it started with sort of collecting myself. And then eventually I got out of college where I was doing these things and I opened up. I was piercing out of my apartment. And at the time I started buying some needles. I put an ad out in the back of some newspapers and people came to me. I couldn't believe the trust that people came to me, came to my apartment. And even in retrospect, it was a little, I mean, I would have someone over with me in the apartment. I don't want a stranger coming over.
Yeah.
So I'd have somebody with me and I'd have the tools. And I, you know, when you start out, it a little bit is like, I watched videos, I read magazines on how to do it. And then you kind of, you know, you do your first few. There are some skin simulants, but we weren't as savvy as we were today with silicone suture skin simulants that we have now. And, you know, you went for it. I did go to San Francisco and study under Fakir Musafar at the time in the 90s. And it was a very cool time in the 90s for piercing. A lot of stuff were being invented back then.
So then in 93, you opened up your first studio in Manhattan. Like that, no matter how talented you are at something and how the genuine flair you obviously had for it, that has to be a huge leap of faith as a young woman opening up your space.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I know. It was exciting.
You hadn't worked for any other studios?
No. I had gotten pierced at another studio, but I hadn't opened it up. You know, I was making a little bit of jewelry and I opened up and I bought jewelry that was existing on the market and I was wrapping some rose gold wire and cutting gaps and putting Indian beads in the middle to make some sort of different kind of captive bead rings in different diameters. It was fun though.
And so Do you think that youth kind of lets us do these things? Because I think, you know, like the older I get, the more cautious I get, you know, and I guess
Me
the
too.
Older you get, you know, there's more to consider, like mortgages and stuff. So you were young and you were like, let's just do this. And you did it.
Had
you, like, was there a business background? Had you a mentor?
No. In fact, my mother was like, go to business school. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to go to business school. But I got a good liberal arts education. Mm. Yes, astronomy was my major. I did not go to grad school. I considered it. I took the GRE, but the general GRE, not the physics GRE. But I felt like I was intelligent enough to do some of this. And a lot of it was, some of it was balls, and some of it was I felt like I was intelligent enough to do some basic stuff. But it is true, when you're younger, you take bigger risks.
You do, don't you? Yeah. Like, I just think, and even in terms of piercing and everything, like, you just become more cautious in yourself.
Well, I take bigger financial risks now, but then I took, like, we just went into it, and then clients became employees and so on and so forth.
So that was one thing. So to set up a business and to run a business is one thing. And to pierce, you know, we know your background in that and how it became your business.
Yeah.
But to fabricate jewelry is an entirely different craft and an entirely different talent. So when did you know that was something that you had and you were capable of?
I like making jewelry a long time. Even it came before my interest in piercing.
Okay.
So my mother took a jewelry making class at adult ed, and I would accompany her. I was age 9, and I remember hammering some designs in brass for a bangle, for example. It was fun. And I look back on some of the early stuff when I was a teenager. I was like, my grandmother crocheted. So I went and I bought like very thin steel wire and I crocheted with the wire.
Oh, wow.
And I kept going. And then eventually I had a bit of, you know, a square or rectangle piece. And then I did two rectangles and I connected together and put a lining in. It was a little purse.
Oh.
So little things like that. I look back, I was like, that was pretty good for me at 15, you know? And then like even a double ring, I wrapped like some cheap metal around two fingers, and I was like, it was like a double ring, and I put a chain in between two ears, like, and I was like, oh, you know, I just, things that I was doing then, like, instead of wearing it as a necklace, I hooked my first two lobe piercings together. So, you know, I was playing around back then. It was natural.
And obviously your mom and your grandmother, like, huge inspiration for you.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you talk about them already a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
I do.
So they inspired you and encouraged you.
Yeah. Well, I always felt, I was very lucky. I think I felt like I could, they never said you couldn't do anything. I really felt like I was lucky. I was brought up in Long Island, in New York, in a culture that I had a good education, and I never felt like I couldn't do anything. Mm. Not because I was a woman or anything. They just felt like you can. I really felt like I could do whatever I wanted to do. And she supported me, you know, through college while I was, you know, I didn't have to work through college. I was very lucky, you know, in that sense. But she also, like, there were times early in the business, my mother, I couldn't make payroll. She gave me the money and like believed in it.
Yeah, and look at it now.
I know, it's touching.
So let's talk about the expansion of your business, because it's gone from that single studio and it's expanded. You're in Rome, you're in London, in Bren Thomas.
I know.
We were just talking about Dubai as well.
I know. So, like, that was a big one.
So you have to kind of, like, you must take these moments to just look at what you've created.
I do. You know, it's a way, like, you know, can you look at these things with your 16-year-old eyes? Would you? I would have been thrilled.
Would you believe it?
I wouldn't have imagined it, but I would have been like, wow, that's so cool. I think that's what I would have said. And it's cute because I see it through the eyes of, like, I remember my ex-boyfriend's niece would be like, that's so cool. Like, it's, you could see it in their eyes. And I too am impressed. Like, the idea of being a designer was very enticing to me even early on. I saw that as a designer. It was very, you know, I'd flip through magazines and, you know, it was very, very aspirational. Yeah. I admire academics, but, like, to me, designer was really amazing.
And then that move into Dubai then, do you see big differences between your Middle Eastern market and your market in New York or Rome or London?
There's a lot of international travel, and because of social media, we do see a lot of certain looks we might put out in New York. It'll race to the Middle East within seconds. But I will say the Middle East is very fun for me because the women are take a lot of risks with jewelry. Like, even, like, for example, they go big.
Yes,
right?
They do.
So they love their big stones. Mm-hmm. They like big combinations of elements.
Yeah.
And they like good quality. And I find it very liberating for, as a designer, like, I can think of something big and I'm like, will anyone buy this? I want to put it out in Dubai. Like, I think
you can experiment more.
I can experiment more. Mm. There'll be an audience there. And, you know, when I first went there, I didn't know what to expect. Here I am, you know, Western woman, Barnard College, you know, it's an all-woman school. And, you know, I thought, are they covered? You know, do they have to ask permission to do things? Yeah. What's going on over there? It was very mysterious. And we did two pop-ups and I was amazed. And I really like fell in love with the area and the women. They really appreciate good quality.
Absolutely. And do you think it's because perhaps, you know, a lot of them have to be covered that they can indulge a little bit more in the facial jewelry and the...
But a lot of them have their ears covered.
Yeah. You see,
right?
That's
hijab,
a
job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and sometimes that makes for difficult healing if they're pressing something against it all the time. But it doesn't stop the expression, even under the abayas and the hijabs, are beautiful clothing. Mm. And they love makeup, they love perfume, beautiful clothing, beautiful shoes. And I think, you know, it's a form of expression.
It's an important place for you to be because, you know, and you spoke to me a little earlier about how you come out of your store in Dubai in the fashion mall and you look up and you see the Burj Khalifa.
So, right, the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I walk out of our store in Fashion Avenue, and I look up through the sky roof, and I see the Burj Khalifa. You know, even before we had the store, I bought a magnet of the Burj Khalifa, and I have a mug of the Burj Khalifa.
Right,
home,
okay. So, do you think there was some visualization in play there? Do you think
it's a symbol of, it's like the apex of what man has created right now, serving at this crossroads of the world, like here between East and West, this sort of middle ground of the Middle East, where we can reach people. You know, in New York, there's an embargo against Russia, but I can reach them in the Middle East.
Yeah,
and same thing with Chinese clients. You know, we can reach them easier there.
Yeah.
And I think it's an amazing melting pot of East and West, plus a symbol they can build. I admire that, building something so huge that we haven't seen before.
But even in the positioning of you there physically, but also the brand positioning, it's very important for you to...
Yes, that's true. We're in the luxury wing.
Much like here in Brand Thomas, you're here. This is like the home of luxury goods, you know, for us in Dublin. So it's great that you're here. I would imagine that you have to restrain yourself somewhat because I would say there are a lot of offers rolling in for or queries about Maria Tash stores in malls around the world and shopping centers. Is this something that you're very careful about, that expansion and how you proceed with it?
Yes. Mm. We get requests daily. We have a business development email that we put out, and we do get requests in and we vet them. Me and my leadership team sit down and we projected out the next couple of years how we want to expand.
Okay.
And certainly I always tell people, you have to stay flexible, though, because if an opportunity comes in that's amazing, I want to be able to insert it if we can.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a business sense, it is a matter right now of factory capacity and want for expansion.
Yeah. So what's your factory capacity like? Because we can see the store expansion and we know that, okay, now you're in Dubai, you're in Brand Thomas, you're online and various outlets. What's your back end like? What's the factory capacity? Where is it based?
We manufacture in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've been working with the factory over 15 years. They're an extended family to me. I can't stress how important it is to have a great relationship with your factory or own it or some sort of a tight relationship.
It's
the
a great
quality
point.
Control. I mean, I used to do quality control when we were manufacturing in New York, and it is a huge part of it.
Mm.
I mean, every piece coming out has to be looped and inspected and tested for longevity, and it's a huge part of it.
It's very important in jewelry. You know, like if I'm buying jewelry, you know, earrings are the one thing that I'm like, oh God, I lose them so easily. Or, you know, you might lose the back of it and then you can't wear them. So this Tash threading then, I think that's really, it's such a clever design because they feel secure. I think like, so I've got 5 Maria Tash earrings in now.
Yes.
I feel like I probably will never take them out because they're just there and that's the way they're meant to be.
Good.
So that Tash threading, that's your design.
Yes, I worked on... So in the body jewelry world, internal threading, meaning threads that you don't shove through your piercing to aggravate that tunnel of tissue, is considered the high-end luxury. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
And I made it thin, so thin but durable. And I took cues from the Swiss watch industry to how to do it.
Okay.
So I looked outside of the piercing world.
Right.
What's the best of the threading world? It was in the Swiss watch world. So I investigated that. And then I also wanted to think, how can I, a lot of the body jewelry, you can't start the thread easily. I knew I wanted a guider pin to the Tash thread. So I sort of created a style of threading that incorporated a couple of different functional needs with the best of the durability out there.
So to anybody who hasn't seen one, it's like a little tunnel, essentially.
Yes.
And then the earring screws in. But there's also a decorative finish at the back. So
They're reversible.
Okay.
They're comfortable on the back.
Are they reversible? I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Theoretically, yes. Okay. And there's some people who we have custom, people that make customers that have like marquee diamonds on the back and round on the front.
Yeah.
And they look, when you put your hair up, it looks beautiful from the back as well.
That's it.
I mean, old school, you see the back of a traditional earring, it looks like an antenna sticking out there and pokes you, it sticks you when you sleep, and it looks ugly. So we wanted to fix that problem.
So back to your team and back to like your production. So it's based in Hong Kong and that's your facility. So that has to expand at the same rate as your store expansion.
Yes, that's a,
Or quicker probably, you know, to cope with that demand.
Yes.
Then in terms of the business that you have around you, so you mentioned a leadership team.
Yes.
So how does your team, what exists within your team?
It's new for us. So we're building our infrastructure as we grow. It's necessary. And you know, this is something that I wasn't taught, that I've learned through the people that I've hired, actually.
Okay.
Some of the consultants who've come on full time and some of the other things like that. I didn't know for many years, me and a couple other people were doing many roles in the company. Yeah. And as we grew, we couldn't handle it all.
Of course.
So we would start hiring people and they would make suggestions. I think you should hire a retail director. Mm. You need to hire a visual director. You need to hire a creative director. You need to hire, you know, a marketing person. And, you know, And as we've done that, that's not a quick process. You have to find the people and they need to resonate with the brand and get along after you try them out. And then, so it's a process, but it's necessary. And then you want to hire people that know more than you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
But then I suppose on the other hand, you know, there are challenges with expanding any business, but then there are other things that are unique to your business. In the world of retail, I would imagine like returns are a pain in the ass for retailers. You don't have such problems, which is fantastic,
right? It's amazing you know this.
So like an earring goes in and really for hygienic reasons, that's your purchase. And
But we also do things like downsizing. Let's say you put in a stud, you don't like the fit of the post, we will give you a free shorter post.
Yeah.
Most people don't do that, but we do it because it's about the fit.
Yeah.
The fit is so critical that you leave with something that is custom to your body. Mm. Now, you know, it's the thickness of your earlobe is not going to vacillate like the thickness of your waistline. Mm. So we
Tell me about it.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, it's like having something tailored right then and there for you.
Yeah.
And we actually like to keep track of your sizes in something called a universal account that you can access through a portal on our website. So if you buy something in London, you can be able to see it on our portal, and same thing in Dublin. Mm. And so you know if you want to buy something online, this is my size. So you know what your shoe size is, your Trigus jewelry size is.
And you have there's a lot of interaction between your customer and, for example, your social media account, you know, and I know that from other people as
social.
Well. That like if somebody tags you, there's somebody coming back saying, okay, let us know how you get on with that. I think that's so important. When you're making purchases, like, you know, fine jewelry, you know, it's important that there's that interaction.
Very important. You know, the pieces are an investment and you want them to last. I want them, you to wear them as long as you want to, whether it be for years continuously. Of course, you can change them out anytime. Mm-hmm. One of the things I was telling the staff in Dublin to make sure they knew is that you can unscrew the frontals and put in a new front piece without changing
the
backing.
Right.
Now, what does that mean? Like a lot of times you'll hear you get pierced on the street or in the cartilage, you can't change this for a year. Now you tell somebody that, what do you mean? I like, I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months.
We all started out with these horrible little studs when we
first got thinks you had to. I got to wear this ugly thing for a while and
like
then I'll put something.
Stone stud.
But it's not like that anymore, right? Mm. We've advanced. So we'll put something in. We'll probably give you a slightly longer post. We'll change out the post for you to make sure things are kept sterile. And then the frontals, We like that tunnel to toughen up, that piercing, but you can change the fronts at any time.
So you can play with it.
You can play with it. Or for people in the, you know, we just work on influencers or television personalities, they need to change it. You can't be like, you can't change this out.
Yeah.
Come on.
And so tell me then, you mentioned influencers. You have a huge celebrity following.
Thank you.
Let's talk about it.
I'm very pleased and proud of that. And most of it's organic, you know?
I mean, it's amazing. Like the names that are attached to Maria Tash, like Rihanna, Zoe Kravitz. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I love that. I'm honored to work on them and privileged, and it's very titillating and very legitimizing. So
FKA Twigs is, when I heard, I said that makes sense because she's got that aesthetic that is just, it's really aligned with your brand, you know, the piercing.
I pierced her a couple times, but so is a lot of my team. She followed us when she comes to New York, came to London. Yeah. Mm.
So tell me, obviously, you know, the word trend shouldn't be associated with piercing because it's a permanent adjustment and it's a decision that you should consider and take your time over.
Yes.
Have you, but the way we consume things is we like what we see, we want it, and we want more of it. And I mean, I was nervous getting a piercing, but then I had three and I was like, maybe we'll get a fourth in. But anyway, time ran out and I had to go. But that's how the love of it starts and increases.
You know, a lot of people come in, just look at the jewelry, and the jewelry can inspire getting pierced.
Big time.
So we have people come in and go, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything else. And I saw and I was like, that's so beautiful. Where can I put it?
Yeah.
So I love that too. Because, I see myself as a designer, number one. Yes, I've pierced for many years. I don't pierce anymore on a daily basis.
Okay.
It's usually occasional now. But I love when the design, you know, inspires a piercing. And you don't even need to get pierced. So if you want to come in, just come in and look at the jewelry. Come in and get fitted.
Yeah.
Let's figure out what color metal looks good on you so you feel beautiful waking up every day when you look in the mirror, you know?
But because we consume that way and, you know, that's life now. You see something and you want it. Have you ever had to encourage restraint with any of your clients? Have you ever had to say, okay, you've gone too far. We're going to hold it back a little bit. No.
I mean, do I encourage restraint? I have never told anyone, stop it, you're going overboard. What I would do is minimize, if they wanted more piercings, I would minimize the jewelry so the overall impact isn't gaudy.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is probably a question you get asked all the time, but like, what's the most unusual place you've pierced?
It's not PG.
Okay, so we can imagine the
Netters. Yeah, I have done all sorts of stuff that, it's lots of fun stories, not PG, but all sorts of things. There's so many different scenarios between people. One of the things that makes, I think, the demographic so wide, or people come in sometimes when they just break up with somebody, they're doing it empowering. Sometimes people come in with their sweetheart as a bonding thing together. We get a lot of mothers and daughters, and I love that personally because I have a long history of shopping with my mother and many, many lovely memories. And I've even seen three generations of women. Grandma comes in just to buy something and mom and daughter come in. I mean, we had stuff where Uma Thurman and her daughter, of course, we came in and did both of them together, bonding so swell.
That's
fab. Gosh. And, you know, at one point I started cataloging all the different types. We had somebody come in who got a septum pierced because he was part of an Indian sect who did it and he was intending to take it out. And I knew it was part of a ritual for that.
Right.
I mean, I had a woman who had open heart surgery and had a zipper scar and we did a dermal anchor so she could feel more beautiful about that.
Wow.
I mean,
that must
so
be
many
powerful for you though, when you know like someone is leaving there and something so personal for that lady, for example, like you've met her feel better about herself.
Yes. I mean, I spent many years in the piercing room, like sort of cataloging all these different reasons that people were getting done.
Yeah. And what could be seen as an aesthetic, you know, industry.
It's more than aesthetic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think you said this kernel of phrase that you were like, I feel more badass afterward.
Yeah.
So you've conquered your fear. But even more, it's like, it's very deep. It's bonding. It's self-empowering. It's beautiful. It's layering. It brings out your coloring. I mean, many, many different reasons. Yeah. So it's, and that's what makes the demographic wide.
It is a wide demographic, yeah. So I'm kind of thinking that's the way the mom and daughter tattoos could happen. Like a mom and daughter piercing is a nice one.
Yeah, I have many tattoos on my arms. I prefer piercing. I always have.
Yeah.
I think it's actually more powerful because you can change it and it can change with you as you evolve. Also, you have more control over it. With a tattoo, it's like, I, or many many of my tattoos, I saw an outline. I didn't see it fully rendered.
There you go.
And, you know, you're at the, like, oh, God, you know, I hope it comes out right. Yeah. And, you know, with the piercing, you have more control. This is what I'm going to put into it now. I can change it. I can take it out. I can put something else in it. I think it's more versatile, more powerful.
So your business has grown hugely in the last couple of years.
Yes.
And, you know, you would be somebody to look up to and admire in terms of what you've created business-wise and also the
beautiful things you
create physically. Are there people in the business world, any women that you look to or that you admire or that you have a relationship with?
Gee. I do admire the best of people who've created first generation jewelry companies,
yeah,
female and men. I look at, like, for example, I have a copy of Forbes top self-made women entrepreneurs on the things. And, you know, talking like visualization and manifestation, yeah, I believe in all that stuff.
I really do too. Well, yeah, it's like you said, right? You know, that magnet of the Burj Khalifa on your, yes, your refrigerator long before you
before
ended
I
up
did
there.
It. I heavily believe in
I
these
really
things.
I really do too, yeah.
Yeah.
I need to start visualizing something as big as you were. So,
you know, some people go very far with the manifestation where they say, you know, if they want to write a book, develop your book cover and wrap it around a book,
yeah,
and things like that. I put that Forbes cover on my counter and I, you know, walk back and forth and I see
that's
it
amazing
under my papers. And I intellectually, I think of what's their annual revenue and I think of my annual revenue and I'm like, okay, what does it take to get there? These regions could generate,
wow,
this annual revenue. And if I accumulate, what is our capacity per year? And I've mapped it out.
That's amazing.
You can work backwards like, yeah, I did. And I want this much success before I'm this age. How am I going to get there?
So to get there then, okay. So the future for Maria Tash, what's the next plan? Where's the next venue? If you can tell me.
We are expanding in the U.S.
Okay.
We're also going to be opening. So we're looking in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And we have we haven't signed the lease, but we have one out. There's this lovely, beautiful space. It'll be the biggest one to date. We're looking. We'll be in Rinascente, Milan this year. So we're opening in Milan. We're hoping everything goes well with our Bon Marché pop up this,
yeah,
year. We're expanding New York, so our New York store will double in size next year. We're expanding our offices in New York, 3 floors in New York. I'm very excited about that because we live there. You know, I spend,
yeah,
more time in my office at work than I do at home. So it's very important that it's a wonderful environment and that we can really be synergetically working together.
So what's your life like?
It's just very exciting.
It's
I'm
amazing.
Very blessed, really.
Do you travel to all these locations? Do you get time out just to enjoy the success you've created?
I enjoy it by working with my colleagues. I'm sometimes so impressed that they're passionate about what comes out of my head. That's what I trip on a lot. I'm like, these people are working all these long hours of based on what's come out of my head.
Yeah.
I that doesn't cease to fascinate me. I'm very,
very
pleased about it. I'm glad that I can give them and their families a better quality of life.
Yeah. It's
working
amazing.
With the company.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's very important to do that. It's not just about me. You know, I want to get there and I'm very thrilled that my team is on board, but also they're enjoying life more than working for other companies, that they,
yeah,
have a better quality of life and as a result, their families will.
Well, look, it's been a joy and an inspiration to talk to you.
Thank you.
And yeah, we're very happy to have you here in Brian Thomas.
Thank you very much. And I really hope as my success grows, I want to inspire other women too.
You have. You've inspired me.
I'm glad. Well, that's good.
Well, it's lovely talking to you, Maria Tash.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.